So it's a big hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 43. We seem to have dropped the theme music in recent shows, and maybe Ewan or Rafe can tack that in at some point. Anyway, so not that theme music. Anyway,
that one.
No. So welcome from me, Steve Litchfield, in Woodley, and also from someone in Sussex.
It's Rafe Blanford.
And someone in Scotland.
It's the amazing, extraordinary portable jukebox, commonly known as Ewan Spence, to his mum and dad. Hello.
I think people probably had gathered that. Anyway, moving on swiftly, before we get sidetracked, some news. There isn't a lot of news that this week. They've got the Symbian show coming up in a week or so's time, so I think everything's going to kick off and go absolutely crazy. But in the meantime, the headline news is probably the E90, which we all thought Nokia had completely forgotten. Turns out they haven't forgotten it, and they've released a version 300 firmware update. Very quickly, it's got improved flashlight, improved smoothness in quite a few areas, and it's much faster when you open and close the device, the way the display switches between portrait and landscape, and a few other tweaks like Maps 2.0. So highly recommended. The big downside is the sheer instability and horribleness of Nokia software updater. As myself and Ricky Cadden and Nick Anstey and a few other AS regulars have all noted, NSU now is a complete pig's ear of an application, and trying to upgrade the firmware device involves numerous battery out cycles, praying to whatever gods you believe in, sacrificing chickens, and generally hoping for a trailing wind just to get it to do anything at all and not brick your device. Nokia, this isn't good enough. How come Apple How come Apple can upgrade your iPod or iPhone with one click and it works every time, first time, and with Nokia software update, there's a 30% chance you're going to have to nip off or send it off to the Nokia service centre afterwards.
That's because Apple is absolutely wonderful and Nokia are just rubbish and riding on their coattails. You should all buy Apple to get rid of your Symbian devices.
Well, speaking as a Nokia quote fanboy, or at least someone who does like Nokia phones, I'm not afraid to call them out and chew them out when they're absolute rubbish. And I'm sorry, Nokia software update is a brilliant idea that is appallingly implemented, and they need to work on that update utility. Any thoughts on this, you guys?
Well, I think you have to appreciate with the Nokia software update such a much bigger challenge than someone like Apple has, or indeed any company that's just upgrading a few devices at a time. The thing about Nokia is it produces multiple devices, and they have multiple variants in different countries and across different operators. So although I actually agree with you, I think this software is a bit of a pig's ear, and some of the method behind it is pretty appalling. I think some of it is also due to the fact there are so many devices and so many variants, and the technology is changing. I mean, if you look at the more recent devices, they do have things like user data preservation, which makes the firmware upgrades much less painless. And also, allegedly, yes, even they're not perfect. But also, I think if you look at something, I think the most recent devices, for example, the N78, and we'll also get this with the 79 and the 85, and anything sort of running S60 third edition feature pack 2 and above, in theory, but it's not going to be every device, also has the over-the-air firmware updates. And certainly with the N78, which I've done an over-the-air firmware update, you do it from the phone, you don't have to connect it to a PC. And admittedly, it's better to have a Wi-Fi connection, but that's a very painless experience. So I think things are changing, and supporting devices that are, getting on for 2 years old, in some ways, I suppose we should be thankful that there's still some updates coming along. I just think you should perhaps be... people need to realise there's more of a challenge involved than they may imagine.
And it's also fair to point out that there are certain legal restrictions as well, because Nokia are not flashing just one device which has, one main firmware on it. It's got to go around all the networks, it's got to go around all the countries, it needs to be quality tested every time. So, yes, Apple can just get away with maybe one or two for UK, Europe, and America in terms of the iPhone. But Nokia in the UK would have to do one for Virgin, for O2, for Vodafone, for Orange, for T-Mobile, the same in Germany and France and so on and so on. It's a much larger task in terms of numbers. That shouldn't excuse the faults and the problems with it. It's just to say that it is a bigger problem. And they also have the secondary problem that people hack their devices to try and get the original one. They don't, the first thing you do when certain people in the UK get a phone from Orange, for example, is strip out all of the crap that Orange had on and put on the original Nokia firmware. So there's a lot more to contend with. But the thing is, the over-the-air upgrade really does actually reduce the cost to handset providers and networks. The biggest returns that you would get in previous years was simply, I think there's something wrong with the phone, and they get another one. And the reason people did that was to get the latest firmware from the network. Now that it can be done over the air, the people that do that sort of thing, that do a lot of churn, that have a lot of phones going back just to get, the extra 5 megabits of power or whatever, can do that themselves. I would be very interested to see how many people actually use the software updater, and I suspect that we will find that it's a very small subset of the users, and in fact it will probably be a significant portion of the readers of a site like All About Symbian. But I think that in the main, the number of N95s, 8Gigs, and U90s out there that will get firmware upgrades will be less than 4% of the base.
I think that's a really good point to make, Ewan. And at the end of the day, Nokia have to do, it's basically about economic efficiency. And that's why they are moving to the over-the-air updates. And actually, your phone will start asking you quite soon whether you want to do an update. And I expect to see a lot more of that in the future. And at the end of the day, I do appreciate that it's an imperfect solution. But when I think back a few years to what you used to have to do to get a firmware update, I think it's great strides have been made forward, and I fully expect that to continue to evolve in the next few years as well.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to these over-the-air updates. I've been very much looking forward to doing it for my Samsung i8510, but there's still no news on that front. I think Samsung are still working on those servers, so we'll keep you posted on All About Symbian. I know that I'm not ever upgrading my E90 again. The hand-wringing and the hair pulling out and the sackcloth and ashes and all the other things I was doing yesterday while watching these bits and bytes streaming down a wire into my precious device, I'm not going through that anxiety again. Yeah, moving on swiftly, talking of the E90 and talking of other related topics and related firmware upgrades, is the comparing the Nokia E90 with the Asus EPC. Ewan, what got your goat about this?
Because they're completely different devices. It's like comparing a tank with a British Army infantry transport vehicle. One of them is designed for war and is designed to be survivable. The other one is bought on the cheap and tries to do the best job that it can, but ultimately fails. I'm not going to say which one is which out of the E90 and the EEE, because people will disagree. But it's a more general point. I think we're beyond the point where we can have one form factor to rule them all. And this is the best device. We've lost the qualifier, which is this is the best device for a person in a situation. I'm sitting here with one of the EEE PCs. It's the 901. It's the slightly more powerful one. And it really does remind me of the Cyan netbook. Cute Steve going all wistful and Rafe going, oh, here we go again. It's got a full web browser. It's got the proper version of Firefox on it. It's got a full email client. It's got an Office suite. It's in no way comparable to the E90. The fact that you can carry both of them around and do work on them, it's neither here nor there, in my opinion. And yes, it's a very thin line. And obviously, there's a huge amount of technology out there that's very loosely related to Symbian that we could talk about on the site. For example, someone in the comments of that article said, could you compare the EEE to the N810? Well, neither of them have Symbian. Kind of misses the point.
But Ewan, that at the end of the day, they're looking to do relatively similar tasks. And so for people who are trying to decide between them, it's a valid comparison to draw, even though they're not exactly the same. By sort of comparing them side by side, you can actually highlight the differences between them and enable someone to make that decision more easily. Because at the end of the day, they're both kind of, road warrior type devices, admittedly coming from very different approaches. But those approaches will suit different people. So I think it's a valid comparison to make, obviously with the caveat that, they aren't identical devices and aren't approaching the sort of problem in the same way.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point, but it just seemed to me to be a comparison too far. I mean, the differences are obvious, and I take the point that the E90 has the keyboard and smaller, but I, you know, there are things that I would do in an E90 that I wouldn't do in the Triple E, and the same as else. And it just seems to me that when you widen out and you look at things like people going, oh, we have to compare the iPhone to the 5800, we have to compare the E71 to the BlackBerry Cyclone Thunderchild or whatever, you know, there seems to be in the sort of tech geek circles, not a death spiral, but a spiral going up the way. If we have to compare one device to absolutely everything else under every single circumstance and declare one a winner, I think I hate to say it, but we're in that sort of new Labour-esque point where everybody's allowed to be first place, and I don't think that we're letting our devices breathe enough to be able to see the differences.
Yeah, I think the whole point of the article was, as Rafe said, that trying to give people a fresh perspective on perhaps which one they might want to buy. It wasn't to declare a winner in any way. It was to give people food for thought. That's all we're really trying to do in a lot of our articles and all about Symbian, is give people food for thought to get them to provoke the old grey matter into thinking what they might want to look out for in the future, what they want to buy, what they might want to recommend.
Yeah, no, I think
we've done that here.
Yeah, and I think you're almost getting upset by the sort of the nomenclature of the article. I mean, calling it a comparison suggests a direct relationship between them. Where, as I said before, I think it's really they carry out a similar role in one sense, but obviously they are different as well. But just as people, you know, you quite rightly said, you shouldn't compare the iPhone and the 5800. That's inevitably going to happen anyway. The fact they're fulfilling different markets, you know, with a lot of these devices there is overlap between them, and there's always going to be sort of a point of friction at which these things, you know, you could go one way or the other, and maybe helping even make that decision is what we're all about. So I can see the point you're making, and not sure I entirely agree with it though.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll move on to S65th edition, which is something that's the software development kit came out last week. Includes a full emulator, which means that an awful lot of people around the world now have got time in their hands to sit installing this umpteen hundred gigabytes? No, 100 megabytes of emulator to play with the raw version of S65th edition. Now, the 5800... obviously include a slightly tweaked version because there are extra applications, utilities and tweaks for that specific device, but it gives a very good flavour of how the 5800 and future S60 devices are going to be working in 2009. Rafe, have you had a play with this, or have you just been looking around the screenshots?
Yes, I've had a play with the emulator and I've had a play with the device, and as you say, there are some quite notable differences. I mean, what you have to understand about S65th edition is it has a base which can then be added to by the manufacturers, both in terms of applications but also in terms of user interface. It's one of the strengths now of S65th edition. It allows a great deal of customization of things like the home stroke idle screen and also the themes, but it does go quite a bit deeper than that as well. So the 5800, it does add quite a bit of difference, and you'll also see differences when we see the different form factors. You know, inevitably we'll probably see a touch device that has a QWERTY keyboard, or a touch device that maybe has a D-pad and a few more buttons on it than something like the 5800, which is very, very much touch focused and touch driven. But yes, I've had a play with this, and you know, if people want to have a go with it, they're welcome to. Although it is worth bearing in mind, there are quite a number of differences. And, you know, interacting with it on a computer screen is quite different to interacting with it on a real device. I guess at some point we should touch on the sort of key new stuff in 5th edition, but perhaps we should get Ewan's opinion first. I don't know. Have you played with this, Ewan?
Nope, I haven't. It's been a long time since I've deliberately installed an SDK to go start fiddling with it. And to be honest, I'll just wait a little bit until we can see something in action in the physical form. My days of playing with that stuff, I hope, are long gone.
Yeah, I've been looking at the many screenshots coming out of the different sites. We linked to some last week on All About Symbian. And I have to say, my overriding impression was that how familiar a lot of it looked. And they really have, it will be something you can pick up and use immediately if you've used any S60 device in the past. I'm curious about compatibility though, Rafe. Am I correct in saying that I can take an S60 third edition application that, say, I've bought now, or I'm familiar with, something like HandySafe or Handy Calendar, and install it more or less as is on an S60 fifth edition device in the future?
Yes, that's right, although there are some caveats around that. Just to comment on what you were saying about familiarity, that's absolutely right. When I was using the 5800, there's an initial hump to get over as you sort of get used to the idea of interacting with it as a touch device, but then I got used to it very quickly, and it's certainly, I found, a UI that grows on you and is very easy to use, especially if you've used a 60 before. And there is definitely a sense of the familiar, and a lot of the optimizations in the 5th edition are really about making it touch-friendly, you know, having the soft keys actually on screen being a bit bigger so you can touch them with a finger, you know, expanding the size of the status bar so you can click on that as well. But to talk specifically about compatibility, now, until we actually see devices and can try this out, some of this is not 100%, but the information I have on this is that if a developer has used the standard S60 UI widgets in the development framework, so effectively, when you develop an application, there's UI controls, and you can use standard ones, or in theory, you can write your own. And you'll recognise that in many applications, you know, they stick to the S60 style, or they have their own style. Those that stick to the standard components should run fine on S60 5th edition. In some cases, there may be something called a compatibility mode, which will add some sort of extra buttons on screen so you can still use the application, and that may be something like you know, arrow keys, but that is very much dependent on an application-by-application basis. So what I suspect you'll find is a lot of applications will work unmodified, especially the sort of the simpler ones that make use of the standard list controls. Some of the more advanced applications that maybe customize the home screen or have custom views for something like the calendar application. I'm thinking here of Epochware's Handy Calendar or Papyrus or other applications of that mold, and maybe Profimail, which have their sort of custom layout, may not work, but I would expect those to be modified in a fairly short basis. There are actually some changes to APIs sort of lower down the stack as well, so there may be some problems there. And again, with sort of the applications that integrate very heavily into the system, and particularly things like voice over IP, for example, although may not work. But I would imagine most applications that you're used to using will work without any problems. Java applications are slightly different. Again, they have a compatibility mode. And if people have used Java applications on the UIQ devices, they'll remember that that has a sort of compatibility layer that again adds on-screen controls to make the Java applications work. And you can expect to see a similar thing there, although again in the SDK there's actually controls that will allow developers to take full advantage of touch. But when Java was sort of first on mobile, you know, a lot of Java applications aren't specifically aware of a touch interface, and there's some things that obviously would need to be customized. So I suspect we'll see activity around that very quickly as well. So the short answer is yes, but the long answer is probably not everything. So maybe 60 to 70% of applications will work unmodified. Some of those will be running in compatibility mode. Some will install but won't necessarily work correctly. You know, they'll mess up on screen or something, and a few applications won't install at all. At the moment, if you do have a prototype device, the chances are you won't be able to install S60 third edition applications simply because it's been blocked in the installation program. But theoretically, backward compatibility is there. But just as with the move from you know, third edition feature pack 1 to third edition feature pack 2, there are always caveats.
It's also going to be interesting to see how Nokia handle this on something like the N-Gage platform, because the 5800 has no obvious N-Gage controls on it. And one of the big things that developers and gamers look for is good gaming controls. And the N-Gage at the moment, when you're playing them on some of the devices, that's one of the areas where things are let down in the games that really require it. So, Rafe, when you were looking at the 5800 at launch, was there any indication of how they were going to handle the N-Gage games? Is this just not going to be a next-gen platform handset, or are they going to give you a little joystick that you can stick on the screen that will press down?
Well, I can't specifically speak to the 5800, but you can certainly expect Engage to be running on a 65th edition sometime next year, as additional devices come out, and certainly it's planned that once we have the N-series touch devices, Engage will run on that. In terms of specific timing, I can't comment. The 5800 was interesting because it actually had Bounce installed on it as a default game. And as you all know, that's actually one of the Engage applications or Engage games. And the version on the 5800 was pretty much identical to the one you get on the Engage. And the control was done using touching on the screen. And to roll the ball forward, you moved your finger up the screen. To slow it down, you moved it down the screen. To move it left and right, you moved left and right. So it was a touch control. So, you know, some games it's pretty obvious what sort of controls you can do, and clearly for others it's going to be more difficult. So what I suspect we'll see is some games will be sort of touch compatible and some won't be. Equally well, there was something for Global Racer, which is another game on the 5800, and that was you steer the racing car by tilting the handset from side to side. I personally had quite a lot of trouble with that, kept crashing into the side. So I suspect, you know, we'll see some different user inputs to sort of deal with the Engage thing, but it will come in time. And, you know, just as we've seen on something like the iPhone with the sort of touchscreen and the accelerometer, you can do some pretty innovative gaming stuff, and I'd expect the same thing to happen on Nokia's touch devices.
Yeah, I was just going to interrupt to ask about the accelerometer driving. I'd have thought Bounce would be a clear candidate for something that would work actually very well with accelerometer input, but obviously Nokia were up against the timescales with the 5800 launch. And I, as someone who's played around quite a lot with the iPhone accelerometer gaming, I too agree that it can be very, very innovative and very interesting. So I would expect quite a few Nokia devices in 2009 to also use the accelerometer for more than just rotating pictures from landscape to portrait.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's worth saying with S65th edition, one of the big changes, aside from addition of touch enablers, is the addition of the sensor framework. And what this sensor framework does is it takes all kinds of sensors. It's not just accelerometers. It also maybe magnetometers like you have in the 6210 Navigator device. And no doubt there'll be more sensors to come. And provides a framework for third-party developers to query these in a standard way. So that will make it much easier for third-party developers to access things like the accelerometer. It has been possible before, obviously, but it's becoming more standard, and also with an acknowledgement that there may be things other than accelerometers that need to be addressed by third-party developers. And of course, having that kind of functionality means you know, developers can create a game with tilt controls very easily, because it's just, as far as they're concerned, another input thing. They don't actually have to write all the code that deals with interpreting it. They'll just be able to call on an API through the front-end processor, I believe, that just deals with that sort of thing. Sorry, not the front-end processor, but it's that kind of thing. And this sensor framework is very much underlining Nokia's platform approach to this, so that developers will be able to access it in a standard way across a whole variety of devices, whereas at the moment in some cases you need to address the accelerometer in different ways depending on which phone you're using or targeting for development.
Yeah, just to bring things back full circle, because we're nearly out of time, but back, we started off talking about the Nokia E90, and you're talking there about S65th edition, and several people have put up images that of a potential Nokia touch communicator, and showing a full screen, full front touch screen, and a full internal touch screen. Now, it's just worth saying these images originated a year ago as part of sort of a concept plans of what could possibly be done in the future one day, maybe. As far as I know, there are no plans to put anything like that into production. Just to tie into that, several people have emailed me to ask me what I think is going to happen to the E90. Now, I'm under no NDAs. I have no exclusive information or access, but if I were OPK, I would aim to do a revamp of the E90, and I would make it slimmer. I would make it run S63rd edition feature pack 2 for sheer stability. The communicators are legendarily a bit behind the curve because OS wise because you want maximum stability and less multimedia gimmicks. So feature pack 2 slimmer, I would keep the screen the same. I wouldn't put a touchscreen in. I've had lots of people emailing me saying they hate touchscreens, especially in terms of a communicator where it's all about the physical access to a keyboard and the tactility. in terms of being able to enter text, and also to see that big wide screen. So I think the E90, a lot of people hate it, some people love it. I think a slimmer version, lighter, with a better camera, slightly more up-to-date software, and no touchscreen, I think would do very, very well. I think putting a touchscreen onto the E90 would be a mistake. Any comments before we finish, guys?
Well, I think you have something there, Steve, but I'd also point out the fact that with S65th edition, we have support for these higher resolution screens, what's being referred to as sort of quarter HD. I can't remember offhand what the resolution is, something like 640 by 460 or akin to that. So that's not that far away from what you have on the communicator. In fact, it's actually more pixels. So what I suspect you'll see is some devices that are nearer to the sort of communicator in sort of the fact that they have a big screen, and it may not be internal clamshell, it may sort of just be external. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a touch device with a QWERTY keyboard that sort of, maybe similar to some of the things we've seen from HTC, I think it's the S780 or something like that, which has a slide-out keyboard or whatever. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that sort of thing. But equally, while I would expect to see devices, that are more familiar in the communicator family, but perhaps, there'll be more than one of those kind of devices that can be seen as kind of the communicator type, a big screen and QWERTY keyboard. So suspect we'll see sort of a more innovation around that kind of form factor as S60 looks to sort of move, as Nokia looks to move S60 into that kind of almost mid-MID type device territory, which the E90 doesn't really get to, but so why not have an N series device that does that sort of thing as well? A lot of people have commented they're like an E90 but with the N series stuff bolted on, so I can imagine seeing a touch device that does that. But yes, I do agree with you. Ultimately, I think we'll probably see a flagship enterprise device in the communicator family or that similar form factor that remains without a touchscreen, because for a lot of people that still represents sort of the ultimate enterprise device.
Yeah, but as Ewan rightly mentioned earlier, there is never one device that suits everybody. I've been writing an editorial for my phone show, and the three categories I came up with are not entirely new, but there's media creators, people who create a lot. There are media consumers, people who consume a lot, and there are what I called messaging freaks, people who have to be in touch, and they require a heavy text in and text out in terms of keeping up with the world. And it's interesting to try and see where each person thinks they fall between the media creators, media consumers, and messaging freaks. I would say I'm part media creator and part messaging freak. What about you guys? You, and where would you fit in those three categories?
Probably close to yourself there, to be honest. I mean, the amount of creation is done, but a lot of it is just going, other people have done this. It's almost part of the remix culture, which really does blur that line between creating new and redistribution and evangelizing. So that pigeonhole there.
Okay, Rafe?
Well, personally, I think categorizing like that I would classify myself as a creator, but I also consume a lot of media on the phone, and I also do a certain amount of messaging, so I fall into all three categories. I've always said in a lot of these mobile devices we see segmentation. Of course, a company like Nokia, Sony Ericsson, Motorola, Samsung have actually segmented the market into anything up to about 40 to 50 categories, of which their product roadmaps will fit into that. And you've obviously simplified that down to three, which I think is a perfectly valid thing to do. But at the same time, personally, I feel you have to see the market as an entire continuum of possibilities, which have multiple dimensions, to get technical about it. Everyone fits in a slightly different place, and a device, may fit in one specific place, but it's complex such that you can't really do it in three dimensions. It may appear in different places within the grid because it can be used in different ways. And so, I'm always somewhat reluctant to classify myself like that, because I do think it depends on A, what I'm doing and where I am, so I may be different things at different times. And at the end of the day, I'll choose a device that suits me best for as much time as possible, but that may mean that I want a device that has the ability to transfer slightly into something else. And I think that's possibly why Nokia's N-series devices and E-series devices have been so popular. You know, they are obviously extremely capable multimedia creation devices, and they've perhaps let go some of the multimedia consumption compared to other devices. Now, I'm particularly thinking of Apple devices, but they are very capable, and but at the heart of it, they're still communication devices as a phone. And I think Nokia's success with sort of open devices, as in the open platform of S60, has been that its innovation and its sort of evolution has come out of phones, which is still, at the end of the day, what you want to do with a mobile device. Thank you, Echo.
There we go. And we're running out of time, and Rafe's dog has come to make an appearance. I have to mention that I didn't hear any woo-wee-woo music from you and when Rafe started talking about multiple dimensions. I thought that's a clear sci-fi spin-off point. Anyway, we'll call it a halt there. We are now over the half an hour mark, so it's a very goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
From me, Rafe Blanford.
And from myself, Ewan Spence.
And from Rafe's dog, Echo, who we had to edit out. Sorry, dog lovers. Bye.